Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to email advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. I'm here in Boston with Jared Weiss from Celtics Blog.
We're actually in Cambridge now, so you have to get that fast.
Technically speaking, yeah, we're in Cambridge. But yeah, we were just at the Celtics-Bulls game one of the playoff series. The Bulls pulled off the upset, 106-102.
The whole world just turned upside down now. Yeah. To think the Bulls could take game one. To see an 8 seed take game one, regardless of the scenario, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that hasn't happened in be clear here, the last time an 8 seed has actually won a playoff series against a 1 seed was the Grizzlies and the Spurs in 2011. So this is definitely a rare thing, but the Bulls still have to win 3 more games, but this was kind of a game that showed how vulnerable the Celtics really are.
The Celtics were vulnerable with Isaiah Thomas scoring above his average. Uh-huh. With him scoring 12 points in the fourth quarter. So, there's a chance he might not play in game two.
Right.
And I'm sitting here thinking, how on earth do they possibly generate offense without him in that game? Because we saw in game one, they could not score with him off the floor. I don't think it was until the third quarter that they hit a field goal with him off the floor. And Stevens can't play him 44 minutes. They play him like 33 minutes a game. And they're able to ramp, usually can ramp up like 5 right. extra minutes per game in the playoffs. He's not going to ramp up another 12 minutes per game in the playoffs, especially considering the tragic circumstances that are going on right now. So the Celtics are kind of going back to the drawing board, I think, at this point. And they're figuring out how do we get the rest of these guys to contribute effectively? How do we shoot better than 32% from three? So 37% from three. They know they got to be shooting in the 40s consistently if they want to win these games, especially against a team that had 20 offensive rebounds in game one, which is, I think it was the 11th time that the Celtics have let a team get 20 offensive rebounds in a playoff game.
And that's been the biggest advantage that the Bulls have had over teams over the course of the season, and especially in this particular matchup, the Celtics have been especially bad when it comes to rebounding. I was looking up the rebounding rates at during the regular season. The Bulls have the fourth best rebounding rate in the league. The Celtics have the fourth worst.
But haven't the Bulls kind of fallen off a cliff since they traded Taj in the rebounding rate?
Not really. I mean, they have somewhat, but it's not nearly to the extent. I mean, obviously, they still dominated the glass tonight with Robin Lopez. Bobby Portis had 9 rebounds. We'll get to Bobby in a little bit. He also had 19 points, which, for his first ever playoff game, that was, encouraging to see from him. We should probably just touch real quick on the Isaiah Thomas stuff. Obviously, I'm sure everybody listening to this has heard the news by now. Yesterday, his younger sister, China, was tragically killed in a car accident, and they didn't know whether he was going to play in this game. He obviously did play. He started. They did a moment of silence for him before the game. It was just a really emotional night for everybody.
It was hard, seeing him crying before the game, seeing Gerald Green crying before the game, interviewing him in the locker room, tears in his eyes, saying he's dedicating his postseason to Isaiah. I mean, every single person was significantly affected on both sides of the coin here.
Dwayne Wade talked about it, Jimmy talked about it. I cannot imagine just going through something like that and then playing a game in front of however many 20,000 people were there. Like, that's just an unbelievable amount of strength that it took for Isaiah to do that.
I'm writing about this right now. It's a really, everybody deals with this in their way.
Yes.
And for him, at least it appears, the way that he felt tonight was that he was already in Boston. It's one more day. When you lose a loved one, someone that's that close to you, you're in this kind of haze for a few days where you're kind of getting hit with, you're in a numb state, and then you're getting hit with the waves of emotion, mm-hmm. feeling lost, feeling confusion, denying, accepting, trying to understand what's going on. And just the idea of going, being able to go through your routine, go through your daily routine, play on muscle memory, do the thing that you can do where it's like, it's already, it's in the back of your brain. So all the things are at the front of your brain, you can kind of just put them to the side for a little while. I think that's something that brings you comfort. And it, that worked for him. And obviously we could see the muscle memory was ticking. I mean, the way he played in this one was just unbelievable. He say he, you know, he brought it out in the first, he saved it for the fourth, it really came alive. He, it really showed that he was able to thrive under the circumstance because it was the, I guess it was the one thing that could give him comfort there. And you have to be happy for him that he was able to yeah. find that at least for a few hours, considering everything he has to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. Just all, some of those shots that he was hitting in the first quarter, you were just looking at that. And our buddy Nick Friedel, who was sitting next to me, who's been on the podcast before, obviously, he just would, you know, said to me at one point, that is just muscle memory, just what Isaiah Thomas is doing, because he had so much on his mind, obviously, with what happened to him and what his family is going through right now, and he was still able to just kind of go out there. You have to, you know, you just have to take your hat off to him for being able to do that and deciding to play after that, and B, you know, playing as well as he did.
You know, I mean, I said this last night when I was talking to people about this. People are going to handle this the way that they handle it, and mm-hmm. it's different for a lot of people. I can tell you from my perspective, I lost my little brother when I was younger. And for me, it was the fog of confusion that I went through for weeks. That fighting through that was the hardest part of it for me.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he had this to grab onto, mm-hmm. to kind of something that he could hold onto, because it feels like you're like trapped in like a tidal wave.
Well, how old were you when you
I was 12
okay.
when he died. So obviously, I was a professional basketball player yet, so I didn't really have that.
Yet.
But like, yet, of course. I'm still working on my lefty layup. But, you know, for him, you know, obviously it's a different circumstance, but you can still understand the psychology behind it. And it's different for everybody. But I can clearly see what I can empathize with in that situation, seeing that for him, not only does he, does he look at his performance on the basketball court as a way to tribute someone because he knows how much it means to all the people that are still here. Mm-hmm. They could see that, and it means so much to them. You could see just how much it meant to not the fans that are here, but everybody in the city of Boston. And that the fact that he can feel like he's contributing something that is valuable to him and to other people, and that helps people that he loves, that's more than he can do than anything else, really, in his mind. And that's wonderful, and that's great that he's able to do that in this time, because when you're not doing the thing that you're great at this moment, you're just kind of suffering, and nobody enjoys that. And if you can get a little bit of reprieve from that, then that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's really stuck out to you in this game?
Bobby Portis, which we're gonna talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the thing that I was so excited for in this series was how they're trying to guard Jimmy Butler. And the fact that the Celtics have three different guys that they can put on Jimmy Butler and Smart, Bradley, and Crowder, mm-hmm. who all have these kind of like pros and cons to guarding Butler, and to see how well it was working. And then the last 14 minutes of this game, just everything, just like he just, Butler just completely beat them in every regard. And Jay Crowder looked slow. Avery Bradley looked small at times. Marcus Smart looked like he didn't have the awareness to keep up at times. I mean, Jim, and those are all great defenders.
If you could combine them all into one player, like all their good traits, it would be the best defender of all time.
Sure, it'd be like probably. Kawhi. It'd be like Kawhi, essentially.
Essentially, guess, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I think Bradley's their best one-on-one defender. He's maybe the best one-on-one defender at his position in the NBA, and which isn't a far-fetched statement. He just made
all
defense last year, right? So, I think he does the best on Jimmy than anybody else out there. And looking back at the tape, most of the misses that they forced were done by Avery, because Avery, he's like a dancing shadow boxer out there. His feet are constantly moving. He shuffles his feet more per like dribble on defense than any other defender in the league, except
is that a Sport View statistic?
That's literally just me subjectively making that up, but it's pretty accurate from everyone that I've looked at. But him and Andre Roberson, the only two guys that I've seen out there that shuffle their feet and have his active feet on defense as much as, you know, as Avery. And it allows him to react to their movements, stride for stride, and he's able to deal with counters and step backs and stuff like that because he moves so quickly. It's like Leo Messi out there, where his steps are so quick that he's able to counter react quicker than anybody out there. And He's really good at contesting without fouling, and that's why he should be the one that's guarding Butler the most. They run into this issue when they have Mirotić out there and they have Wade out there, because Bradley is often going to be on Wade unless it's with that small lineup or Crowder's up at the four, and then they can put Bradley on Jimmy. But so we're seeing a decent amount of Jay Crowder on Jimmy, and that has not been working very well. It worked in like the first two quarters it was working, but then it kind of fell apart at the end there.
Well, they did such a good job in the first basically 2.5 quarters of keeping the ball even out of Jimmy's hands. He only had 6 field goal attempts in the first half. Right. It was mostly Robin Lopez and Bobby Portis that were carrying him, and that's why they were leading. But then, you know, in the third quarter, like midway through the third quarter, and then obviously into the fourth, Jimmy Butler scored 23 points in 14 minutes in the second half, and it's, you know, when he can still just finish over height and do stuff like that, it's you know, he's pretty hard to stop.
I mean, Jimmy said that the difference for him in that phase was just that the shots were going in.
Yeah.
But,
well, he's never going to admit that somebody else was defending him well. That's just not how he. That's that. I guarantee. I've covered the guy for several years. He's never going to just say, "Oh yeah, he was doing a really good job on me," but then I figured something out. He's never going to admit this to somebody that, "Hey, this person was doing a good job slowing me down. It was just I'm not making shots." That's just how he's wired.
Well, it's funny because when Robin and Jimmy were at the podium after the game, I asked them, like, what did you guys figure out in that phase between? Because it seems like most of the Jimmy's offense comes working hand in hand with Robin to free him up, whether it's on or off ball, which Robin does an amazing job at. He's the best moving screener in the game. He's so
moving
good.
Screen. I like that. Is that sort of a backhanded compliment?
I don't take offense to moving screens. I think unless it's really egregious, like a trip or a hip check or something like that.
Some of those Andrew Bogut ones.
Like I covered Kevin Garnett. Like, come on.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Kevin Garnett literally would run around with his elbows out and just like bowl people over.
He'd always get those calls because he's Kevin Garnett.
Exactly. He never sell a legitimate screen. And Robin Lopez is today's Kevin Garnett, apparently, based on his moving screen non-calls. So
I'll tell him you said that. I think he'd probably.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that. But so when I was asking the question about like what did you two figure out with each other to free Jimmy up off ball, because like the play I noticed the most was they had an inbounds play where Jimmy was right under the hoop and he inbounds it, and then Robin sets a screen for him like the second he steps from out of bounds, and he runs to like the top of the key and turns around, catches and shoots over, I think it was over Bradley, like barely made it past Lopez on the screen. I mean, Lopez just completely trapped him. It was like perfectly executed out of bounds play. Jimmy hits a great turnaround jumper from like 18 feet out. And it was like, when I saw that play, I was like, holy crap, Jimmy's going to win this game single-handedly for them. And you really did. He gets like 2 feet of space, and they're screwed every single time.
Yeah, he does. He's one of the best guys at just creating, even, you know, through contested looks like that. Bobby Portis, I think, is the real big story from tonight's game. 19 points, 9 rebounds. Just every single, he shot 8 of 10 from the field. Every single shot he was taking, it just looked like he was so confident shooting it. And he's a guy that, he's never really struggled with his confidence. He's one of the few guys that didn't struggle with his confidence like throughout the season. But, you know, he's a guy, he's been up and down all season. He's had really good games, he's had really awful games. You just don't know what you're going to expect out of him. But, you know, he was the guy. He just looked like he belonged out there out of any of the young guys.
We got one good Hoiberg quote tonight. What was that?
One good Hoiberg quote. We asked him about, you know, about Bobby's performance, and he said that Bobby is the, out of all their young guys who haven't really had any playoff experience, because if you think about it, his, you know, the starting lineup is all veterans. I guess Nico's only a third-year guy, but it's mostly veterans who have been in a bunch of playoff situations before. Obviously, Rondo and Wade have played in a ton of playoff games. Jimmy Butler's played in some playoff games. Robin Lopez, when he was in Portland, has played in some playoff games before. It's, you know, out of all these guys, but then everybody on their second unit, all four of the guys that played tonight, Grant, Zipser, Portis, Felicio, none of those guys had ever played in a single playoff game in their career, because they're all either rookies or second-year guys, and the Bulls didn't make the playoffs last year. But, anyway, Fred Hoiberg said that out of all of their young guys, Bobby was the one that he was the least worried about, just because of how confident he is and the way he always carried himself and the way he just kind of plays hard every single minute he's out there, no matter what, how he's playing or if his shot is going in or not. And tonight, all his shots were going in.
You know, the thing is, when the Celtics, I'm just watching the tape again now, when the Celtics would ice on a pick and roll involving Wade and Portis, or Butler and Portis, they would just completely abandon Portis. And Portis was getting wide open 20-foot looks the entire night, and he buried all of them.
I don't think he was really in their scouting report. I don't think they were really planning. I think maybe in the next game, the stuff that they were planning on you throwing at Nico Mirotić defensively, maybe they have to focus that on Portis, because Nico was awful tonight.
He was terrible. You know, I didn't really have a chance to scout Portis yet. I mean, I assume the Celtics scout their opponent more than I do.
Probably.
But I didn't have Portis on my scouting plan either. So, I'm rewatching the tape now and just seeing all of these shots are just him getting left. Double trapping or icing on the pick and roll, and he's just getting wide open looks from 20 feet out. And that's a problem for the Celtics, because Wade was bad, but he still draws two defenders.
Right, he's still Dwayne Wade. He's still somebody you have to respect.
But he also had that breakaway where he tried to dunk over Isaiah Thomas and he went front rim, and I feel like you got to see that play. Like, you know what? We don't have to trap on Wade on pick and rolls as much.
So you think maybe that was a smoke screen? Like, he did that to make it be like, oh, look, Wade, he's washed up now. You don't have to actually double team him anymore.
You think he's pool sharking them?
He might have been. I mean, Wade's a savvy veteran. I wouldn't put that past him. But he had a couple of other moments that sort of redeemed that. He had a huge block at the end of the game that was one of the plays that sealed it. But he didn't have, when on that missed dunk, he didn't really have a phantom DeMarcus Cousins, because it was almost the same thing. Do you remember that game they played against Sacramento, two, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
That Wade misses a dunk and they call a foul on DeMarcus Cousins, who's like 2 feet away from him and doesn't even touch him. And so it just reminded me of that. That was the last time I can remember Wade just like completely blowing a wide open dunk, but they didn't call a phantom foul on anybody on the Celtics.
I mean, if Cousins was on the Celtics, they probably would have called a foul on him, right?
Well, hey, I mean, maybe if they had traded all those Brooklyn picks for him, because they were one of the teams that was like thought to be maybe interested in him at some point, right? Maybe that could have been
everything. I had heard was they were not interested in bringing that personality into the locker room, and it doesn't seem like New Orleans is that
really
thrilled with
out.
It either. It
hasn't really worked out too great in New Orleans now.
Okay, so let's go back to Mirotić, because
sure.
Nikola Mirotić got so many. I know it's your show, but I'm asking the question.
No, absolutely.
So
no, let's talk about this.
Mirotić, I mean, just rewatching the film here, Mirotić got so many easy looks at three, and he missed just about every single one. He only hit one shot tonight. So how much of an anomaly is this for him?
Well, it's just one of those things with Nico, and this is kind of just the way it's always been with him, not just this season, but going back his first 2 years in the league. He's a guy who gets in his own head a lot. He struggles a lot with his confidence. He needs to see a couple of shots go down before he starts to really heat up. If his first two or three shots of the night don't go in, he is just not... You're not going to really get anything out of him that night, because he's going to put his head down. He's going to be afraid to shoot. He's going to, he's going to start second guessing himself. Now, on the flip side, if he hits his first couple of shots, he might just mess around and hit 7 of 9 threes that night and basically single-handedly win a game for the Bulls. It's just kind of one or the other. I can't remember the last time there was an okay Nico game. He was either just lights out, couldn't miss like he was for most of March, or he was just absolutely terrible like he was tonight.
You know, funny thing is, so his last shot of the game came at the 5:43 mark in the third quarter, and Al Horford grabbed that rebound, and that was also the last rebound that Al Horford grabbed the entire night. So Mirotić and Horford suffered together, at least in that regard.
That's interesting, but yeah, I mean, that just goes exactly to what I was saying, and I mean, part of this is because Bobby Portis played for most of the fourth quarter because he was the guy who was hot at that position, but the fact that Nico's last shot attempt came halfway into the third quarter is just really telling, because if he had made a couple of those shots, early on in the game, he would have maybe been a little bit less hesitant to shoot. And he passed up a few open looks tonight too, mm-hmm. and had to kick it out to Wade. But the Bulls did not play a great game, because essentially there were a few different guys had different plays. Jaren Grant hit a three at the end. Paul Zipser had a block. Like, the guys had individual plays that were good, but three guys actually played well tonight on the Bulls: Jimmy Butler, Robin Lopez, and Bobby Portis, and they still won.
Do you want to talk about Robin Lopez, the greatest hook shot in the game?
I mean, Robin Lopez. I mean, this is just what Robin Lopez has been. He's such an underrated, all-around big man. He hit a couple of those mid-range shots, and I wrote about this at The Athletic a couple months ago. He's been hitting those a lot more. First of all, he's been shooting a lot more of those shots this year than he ever has before, but he's shooting in the mid-40s from mid-range, which, when you have a guy like that who's, Robin Lopez has a reputation as mostly just like a guy who scores around the basket and gets putback dunks and rebounds. If he can step out and hit that mid-range shot, that's a huge threat for them.
He hit one from 20 feet. It looked from where I was sitting at the other end of the stadium. I thought it was a three. I was sitting next to Kevin O'Connor. We were like looking up his game logs to see if it was his first career three-pointer, and then we found out it was actually like a step inside the three-point line.
No, his brother's the one that's really added a three-point shot to his game this season. Yeah. Robin hasn't really quite done that, but he can step out and hit that 18 to 20 footer, and he's been really effective. And then obviously this is exactly the kind of matchup where he is just going to eat, because he's such a good rebounder anyway, but the Celtics are such a bad rebounding team that he's just going to get all the rebounds.
But it's funny because I was watching Lopez and Mirotić warming up before the game doing the shooting drills.
Uh-huh.
Lopez just takes 100 hook shots. The shots that we saw him hit in the game, he just keeps doing those over and over and over again before the game, and he makes every single one of them. Mirotić, I saw him do a few shooting drills. One was where he's coming down in transition and taking a 25-footer, couldn't hit it. Tried it both sides, missed every single shot. But then they would run one where he would set like a flare screen on the elbow and then cut back to the top of the key, catch and shoot, and he was actually really good on that one. But we didn't see him take that shot the entire night. All of his shots were like spot-ups from the elbow or corner threes. And it's like obviously their warm-ups are not a perfect indication of what's their best shot, but I feel like Mirotić didn't seem like he was utilized to his strengths tonight. But on the flip side, he also got a ton of good looks at three that he bricked, because his shooting mechanics are kind of weird. He doesn't have like a strong follow through. His elbow positioning is a little like inconsistent. I don't know if he just needs to kind of straighten out his upper body mechanics or what it is with him. But confidence is usually the clearest indicator of why your mechanics aren't consistent or solid.
Right, and he's not a guy who has, you know, one shooting form the way that a lot of guys do who are the best shooters in the league. I have to think he's not going to shoot that badly in the next game, or as badly as he did tonight. It'd be hard to be worse, but, you know, again, this is Nico. He's been inconsistent all year, but I think the fact that they were able to win this game, getting that little out of him, is pretty encouraging. Now, as far as Game 2 goes, that you said there's a chance that Isaiah Thomas might not play in Game 2. Is that because of the funeral?
Yeah, so Stevens kind of confirmed that this was a concern in the post-game press conference, but it seemed like Stevens was indicating that they don't know what he's going to do, that he might be flying back to Seattle to attend a funeral, and that the Celtics are going to leave it to him. He'll make his decision whether he's going to be able to come back and play probably Monday or Tuesday. The thing is, if he's in Seattle, it's like an eight-hour trip.
That's a long flight.
Back when you consider the time zone change, so it would be really hard for him to be able to come back in time to play at a 7:30 tip on Tuesday night. So I would not be surprised if Isaiah Thomas doesn't play. Who knows what's going to happen? I hope for his sake that he goes to the funeral and
go
is there
be
with
his
family. Yeah,
that's way more important.
There's certainly nobody that's putting pressure on him to play. And his coach said that the team and the coaching staff and ownership down, they all are very clear to Isaiah Thomas that he must do whatever he is most comfortable with and whatever is best for him and his family. So, you know, if he does play, then obviously that's great if that's what he wants to do. We'll see what happens. We do know, talking about basketball, that we do know if he isn't there and he doesn't play, that the Bulls are they're definitely the favorite in that game, because the Celtics demonstrated tonight that even with his offensive capability, they had trouble beating the Bulls, and without it, they're not going to be able to score. They're not going to score 90 points without him.
What I would say to that is that the Bulls have found ways to lose a lot of games that they should win this
season. They're
very
skilled at that, aren't they?
I know that the Celtics without Isaiah Thomas, that's a matchup that the Bulls should win pretty easily, but they're, you know, this is also the team that has lost this season to the Nets, the Sixers, the Magic, the Knicks a couple of times. So many different teams that are a lot less talented than even the Celtics without Isaiah Thomas. They've lost to a lot of teams like that. So I would not, let's say Isaiah doesn't play on Tuesday, I would not pencil. I mean, I agree. I think they'd be favored, but I wouldn't pencil that in as a win by any means.
No, it's the playoffs. Can't pencil any. The Warriors are playing, maybe. But
the Blazers were competitive with them for three quarters, and then just pulled away.
Yeah. Hey, three quarters in a basketball game is not that bad when you're going against Golden State.
It is true. So this was fun. Jared, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for coming over.
You can follow, tell people where to plug, find your work, plug yourself a little bit.
You can find me on Twitter at Jared Weiss, NBA, JaredWeiss. I'm sure you know how to spell NBA,
yes.
All one word. I covered the Celtics for CLNS Radio and Celtics Blog. You can see all my work. see all my words written down on Celtics Blog. You can watch me talk words out of my mouth on CLNS Radio and our YouTube channel. So
I was on that tonight.
You were on that tonight. We have the Garden Report post-game show. It's a video post-game show after every game. And you're going to see a lot of Mr. Hykin on that post-game show during the series. And I'm going to be traveling out to Chicago for games 3 and 4. So you'll see a lot of him while I'm out there as well. And then we have all of the locker room videos and press conferences on our YouTube channel there. So if you guys want to see everything in full, as opposed to just like a couple minutes here and there, like you see on ESPN or, you know, news, whatever, that's the place to go. CLNS YouTube channel.
Yeah, those guys all do a great job. So do that. And then obviously, as always, follow me on Twitter @Hykin. Subscribe to Locked On Bulls. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Check out Locked On Celtics. I think John Corrales was the one that hosted this one because Jay was at the game with us.
That's right. And they got Sam Jam Packard. I used to host the local station WEI Celtics podcast with before he switched over to those guys.
Cool. Yeah, so check out Locked On Celtics if you want to kind of get the Celtics perspective on this game and this series so far. Those guys are always doing a great job. They're worth checking out. Find us on Twitter @LockedOnBulls, like us on Facebook @LockedOnBulls. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe there. If you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer, make sure you email us @LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.